Thank you for listening to the Content Magazine podcast, Conversations with Silicon Valley's Creatives. I'm Daniel Garcia, your host and the cultivator of Content Magazine, published by SV Creates. This episode of the Content Magazine podcast is brought to you by Bonfire, a Silicon Valley digital agency building elevated websites for ambitious brands. Find out more about Bonfire at bonfire.com. Hello, welcome to the Content Magazine podcast, and I am here today at Santa Cruz Arts Council with Ann Osterman, who is the Open Studios and Events Director. How are you doing today, Ann?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to talk with you about everything Arts Council.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited to.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Well, we've never really talked other than like, hi, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so this is great.
This is super
cool. So thank
cool.
you for opening up the space. Let me be in here today.
My pleasure.
So you've been with the Arts Council for 20 years.
20 years. This last October was my 20th anniversary.
That's awesome. That's pretty incredible to have that kind of like legacy and long term at any kind of like institution or any kind of work even too. So what do you think, what has made you stay for 20 years?
Open studios.
yeah, you love it.
Well, I started out in the arts ed department, and the reason I even found out about working at the Arts Council was I had been a volunteer with the Spectra Arts program, and my kids had Spectra in schools, and then I was looking for a job, and the job opened up for an arts ed assistant. I did that for about a year and a half, and then the open studios person was leaving, and I just walked into my executive director's office and said, don't publish that job. It's mine. I just knew I would love it. And I've been producing open studios for 18 years.
Yeah.
And well, I'm also a creature of habit. I've lived in my house 33 years. I keep cars a long time. I keep friends a long time.
Yeah.
And some people like that would drive them nuts. But I don't do the same job every year. I'm always improving. Like with open studios, what keeps me going is every year I'm like, what can we do a little bit better? What do we need to adjust because times are changing?
Yeah.
And I also have this wonderful depth of relationship with all these artists because the majority of them come back, probably, you know, 60, 70% of them every year are returnees.
Yeah.
And they know me.
Yeah.
And I know them. And it's very comfortable.
It builds relationship and trust, right? So I think it's great for the arts community to have that kind of longevity. How many artists usually are featured in open studios?
Around 300.
300.
300.
Would you say that you have do you have personal contact with all of them, either through email or even phone calls or visits? Or, I mean, like, how does
a number of them have become great friends.
Yeah.
There are still a few every year that I physically have never met every year. Yeah, because we, everything's done via email.
Right.
You know, they apply and then I like contact them and I do a bunch of communicating with them.
Yeah.
And then it got especially dicey when we came back from COVID because people were still a little nervous. But we always have an artist reception. And I've started in 2021 and did it last year too. We started having regular artist meetups.
Awesome.
June, July, August, and September, just to give people a chance to get to know one another.
Because
the coolest thing is I remember when I took the job, I was thinking, gosh, I wonder if these artists are competitive with one another. Couldn't be more opposite. There's such a sense of mentorship and support. And the veterans like, hey, newbies, try this. This was, the, you know, and so I actually poll them every year. What would be your favorite thing that you're, the best thing you could tell somebody new, what to avoid or what to do, what to focus on?
And
so it's lovely. Yeah. I'm like, I share all this info and I it's a great jump into being a professional artist, being in open studios, because it's no small feat to open up your creative space, have a body of work ready, priced, presented, and interact with the public for 7 hours a day, two days.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about that, how important it would be actually to participate in the thing that it does force you to have a deadline and have a body of work, and then you have to put yourself out there to see what the public thinks of it, which is, you know, is always hard as an artist to put your work out there, right?
And you know what's interesting is I can't remember when it finally dawned on me, but a lot of these artists are introverts.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal for them to open up and be present. One of them told me one day that on the first day of Open Studios every year, he feels like he's opening up his underwear drawer for the world to look at. And he's like, oh God, I hope they think I'm an okay guy.
Yeah.
And I'm such an extrovert, it never dawned on me, but it's really a leap of faith for them. And it's strange to have the public come. And I mean, often it's wonderful, but it can also be strange seeing how people react to your work or find it unpleasant or not their thing. And, you know.
And it's something that you're doing out of a passion and a love. And it is opening up your underwear drawer or whatever it is, in your heart, in your soul. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably the most difficult thing, right, for artists to kind of begin to be public with their work, because it is kind of so personal.
And a lot of skills to learn, marketing and you know, how to price things. Pricing is a huge deal every year, and how to describe who you are and how to be prepared to answer questions and how to engage with the public. And
because the open studios, it's not just anybody who applies. You do still do
jury.
Yeah, I have a jury for the thing. So there's our people, unfortunately, that for whatever reason, either space, numbers, or skill, or that don't.
Do you remember the two criteria? Because you served as a jury. Yeah. The jurors, and it's all anonymous. So they're looking at somebody. They don't know if that person's been painting for 30 years or 2 years. And they're looking for technical proficiency in that medium and a cohesive body of work that shows a development. And that's usually what snags people is they want to show, I can do this and this and this. And you're just like, not kind of starting out, trying to find their way. And so
that is probably, I think, and being any kind of juror for that kind of stuff is always so painful because it's like you, so much of it, you love everybody, right? You want them all to get in. But I think that's kind of like a very important point is that a lot of times there's not a cohesiveness, right? Mm-hmm. The person's still trying to figure out who they are, what they do, and that kind of,
And the question often comes up, so I should do 7 flowers. And I'm like, it doesn't mean you have to do all florals. If you have florals and landscapes, there still needs to be a voice in those.
Yeah, the voice.
And and we have workshops, and we share with them who the jurors are going to be. And we do a lot of, we try as best as we can to remind them that that capture of their artwork is the only thing that speaks for them. Yeah. That's another issue, too.
There's a lot of vulnerability.
It's like literally somebody's looking at your work on a computer screen.
Yeah.
And does it really look at, you know, does it show who you are and what you can do? Veterans every year don't get juried in, and newbies get every year. We're without trying, somewhere between 13% and 17% of the artists are first timers.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's just
kind of,
so we always have new people, and then we always have returnees, and people take some years off, and it's the mentorship and the development of skills is something that I really value, and we get good feedback each year, especially from the new artists that, I felt so supported. I'm like, my whole goal is for somebody not to get on opening day and go, oh my God, I am so not ready for this.
It is good too, even for artists, because, you know, making a living in the Bay Area as an artist, right? But even for the applications that you might need for grants, like starting with doing open studio, at least gets you ready, like, to speak about your work and who you are and putting it together. So that's great. Yep. So I'm kind of curious. So it sounds like you came to the Art Council because your kids were in art. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, but you 20 years ago, even more, what's your art kind of like history and experience and your kind of connection with art?
I did tons of art as a kid, but I never pursued it after I, you know, went off to college and everything.
What did you do for college? What was it?
A history major.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, loved it. I actually never planned to work in my life. I thought I'd be like my mom and get married and have kids and stay home, being a stay-at-home mom. So then I ended up working in the electronics industry, and I was a planner. I was a production coordinator.
There you go.
Yep, I was a production coordinator, had my kids. Then when the kids were little, I went back part-time as a planner at another place and then found the Arts Council job. And then in the meantime, I was also a Girl Scout leader.
Okay.
Girl Scout leader, day camp manager.
Wow.
So what's funny is I always think the Girl Scout work was great. It was really hard work and it was hard and I worked in, but it was all volunteer. And then I started working at the Arts Council and I'm like, oh, this is like Girl Scouts, but I get paid. I mean, and then all of the knowledge that I learned being a production coordinator in industry, basically you learn scheduling, you backward schedule, you order your parts, you get it tested, you get it kitted, you get it shipped.
Yeah.
So I'm backward scheduling open studios every year.
And
it's just like, okay, I can do this. And then and people were like, wow, it seems really comfortable to you. And I'm like, well, I got the planning thing. And in Girl Scouts, I worked a day camp that had 250 kids and 50. Yeah. I'm like, it's just like working with a bunch of. So luck. It's really funny how all those skills came into. And then I like people. And I like the artist. And the only thing that's funny is in the years I worked in electronics, engineers read everything.
Oh.
Artists, not so much.
Engineers very much are in like, the weeds and the details.
But the artists are much more fun to work with. I'm like, okay, so they didn't read that. I'll put it in bold next time or I'll make it simpler. I've had to learn how to try to, and their artists are visual.
Yeah.
So every year I'm looking at my communications, I'm like, oh my God, that's a whole page of text.
Right.
How can I make this drop in more or,
you
know, shorten it? My messages, one of my board members taught me how to streamline the messages to information about the thing, click here. So if they really do want to pay attention and find out information about the preview exhibit, they click and then there's all the, instead of the blah.
Yeah, the, everything laid out.
Learning skills, but yeah,
that's cool. That's interesting. So then if you were, let's, you know, Anne at 16, 17, if someone said like, this is what you're going to be doing in the future, you would never have imagined.
Never have imagined.
Yeah. That's cool. It is interesting just to see like, you know, so many people that I talk to is that, it's kind of like these happy connections and accidents, but all things kind of converge together.
Yeah. Spectras are the arts education or the arts education wing of the Arts Council. And this was back in the day when Spectra, so my kids were in school in the early 90s and Spectra was in full swing with Hewlett and Packard matching funds.
Okay.
So my kids went to this school and if the school dedicated $10,000 to Spectra, it was matched.
Yeah.
My kids had what were called residencies. So every class had an artist come in for 8 lessons.
That's awesome.
And the lessons were always curriculum based. So the artist would meet with the teacher. Oh, you're studying Native Americans? Okay, we're going to do this. Or you're studying birds of prey? Oh, we'll do this module or whatever. So I saw firsthand the joy of the arts ed.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting how that got me, you know. And my daughter, actually, the job was posted on SantaCruzJobs.com. My daughter was like, Mom, there's a job at the Arts Council. I'm like, sounds good. And I literally applied, and the deadline was the next day. So even one of my kids is responsible for me getting that job.
So that's kind of cool, the happy accident of finding yourself here.
Exactly.
So now 20 years. So in your 20 years, what would you say, how have you seen the art culture in Santa Cruz changed in the last 20 years?
Interesting. Well, probably one of the biggest shifts was the building of the tannery.
Yeah,
you know,
which is beautiful, wonderful.
And art-centric. You know, you've got the 100 live-work lofts, and you've got the studios. I've just seen a real recognition of the value of the arts. Mm. It really helped when we did those two arts and economic prosperity studies.
Sure.
It showed how much art makes a difference here in the county.
Yeah.
Jobs and income, you know.
Yeah.
And so that really shifted. And then I've seen probably over the last few years, the real shift in funding is now heavily focused, thank goodness, on equity.
Right.
And we're really looking at everything and seeing, wow, where have we been inequitable? How can we be more equitable?
Yeah.
You know, both in race and gender and income and everything. And we've just now actually we're leasing a building down in Watsonville. It's called the Watsonville Center for the Arts. And
awesome.
It's a dedicated practice space for singing and dancing groups in Watsonville,
cool.
which is
right on.
Huge. So it's a hub. And then that's, we're looking for the same kind of feeling as a Tannery Arts Center, just meeting people where they are and providing what they need, which is really cool.
That the tannery can exist shows a commitment from the community to the arts.
So, definitely.
And that's funded then by the county.
Oh, you've got the city and the county, and it's a whole bunch of wonderful players, but it's a good mix. Art space, the company that worked with the city still manages the studios.
Yeah.
And we have a property manager that manages the lofts. And we lease this building from the city of Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this is the old original Cron house from the 1870s, the family that ran the tannery.
Oh, that's
it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's the brick wall.
Is that the only standing...
That's probably, yeah. In fact, I remember when I saw the guys who were working in the building, they're like, that was a hard room. It's got a big steel beam reinforcement for earthquake proofing.
Totally, yeah.
But yeah, if you go down into our storage room, there's a big old basement. There's an old basement. They probably where they had their pantry and all, all their canned goods and bottled goods.
And then I guess, too, then because it's being run by the county or is subsidized or then I guess the rent is kind of... reasonable and
we did San a 30-year lease. It's so lovely. Awesome. It's like we moved here in 2013. It's like 30-year lease. Like this is where we are. This is where we can settle.
That's awesome. Yeah, because San Jose, there's a place called the Citadel. I don't know if you're familiar with this. It's an arts kind of community where people can rent spaces, and they just doubled the rent for the artists.
Oh.
So there's a great exodus of the artists leaving from these art spaces. Yeah, it's really sad. You know that
it is.
Yeah, the government can't help or people can't help, you know, supply that for the arts. Cause arts, as you said, is so crucial.
Yeah. 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 So that's, I have also seen, there's just more art available all the time. Like 20 years ago, Open Studios was the time in the year when you went out to look at art and then maybe a few spring festivals. But now we have the first Friday art tour.
Yeah.
Which is all throughout the county and a little, a lot more activities. And then in Open Studios, Open Studios is still unique because you meet artists where they create.
Yeah.
But the first Friday art tour is lovely, and they've created a really nice hub here at the tannery where they invite in guest artists that are in the hallways and other things. So it's not just the artists that are always here. They kind of each year, each month do a kind of a cool gathering. And so, it's dedication to it. Everybody really understands the place of art in a healthy community. It's lovely. Yeah. It's lovely to work in a place where people, you don't have to convince them the value of the arts for everybody, any form, art, dance, theater,
I think it might be, even to other kind of cities in the Bay Area, it seems like Santa Cruz kind of has a history of attracting artists to live here. So maybe that's probably why it's a little bit more of the ethos of the county,
and of
would
course
you say?
That's a hard thing to do these days with the cost of frustrating
the housing in Santa Cruz in the last 5 years is just
it's awful.
We love tech, but we
love tech, but we hate seeing a little plot over on the west side sell for $900,000 and it's a 750 square foot shack or something that hasn't been that's unfortunate. And that's a hard thing that we're facing too, is how do you, because what I've seen, what I know from artists in Open Studios, the average that somebody can earn is usually between $2,500 and $5,000, just on a basic year. And that's gross, not net.
Yeah.
Some people have developed far bigger audiences and whatever, but it also fluctuates. So one year I've had artists had a year where it was like, oh my God, the sales and the people, and I made $12,000.
Yeah.
The next year they're like, oh my God, didn't sell a single original. Their art's still the same, high quality, whatever.
Yeah.
And for some reason, people walked in that studio that year and just didn't walk out with stuff.
Yeah.
And so they can't, it's also an independable or undependable, is that the word? Or inconsistent. Income.
Yeah.
So they have to, and majority of the artists that take part in Open Studios have another job or are lucky enough to have a partner that keeps them, that can offset any losses or lack of income.
Yeah. That seems to be pretty much the story. I don't think it's just unique to our area. It just seems like, if you're an artist who has a second kind of like income, or you have a partner who's actually the real money maker in some ways and, but I think some of that is it's sad. We want all artists to be able to do what they want to do. But if you even look through history, how many artists actually while they're living are making a great
and there aren't
income.
Many Medici around here these days.
Exactly. So what about you? So then I see that, in your bio that you put on that you do gardening and also some fabric textile work.
I do a little craft. I'm a crafter. So I do too. And it reminds me of what it's like to be on the, to be the seller. So I do a little May Day art show with some friends and I do a Christmas one and I make functional, fun fabric things. And it reminds me of, you know, your preparation. What am I going to price them? Am I going to have, how am I going to talk with my customers?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really fun. And what's nice, what's lucky for me is at the moment, I don't, it doesn't matter what happens at the show because I've got a regular paycheck coming in.
Yeah. Totally.
But yeah, it's fun.
So you said functional.
Functional. Oh, I make little zipper cases, wallets, cell phone purses, microwave cozies, little, I'm always coming up with something new.
Yeah.
And it's fun. My daughter's old room is now my sewing room. And I just get in there and stream some show on Netflix and start pairing fabrics. That's my palette is the fabrics going, ooh, those would look nice together.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's really fun.
Do you have then for that? Do you personally have kind of like a goal or a strategy? Is it like things like I'm going to try to get to the studio 3 times a week? Is that kind of a part of your practice or?
Interesting. Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. Well, and what it's kind of like with Open Studios. I have a deadline. Yeah. I have my holiday show. So right after Open Studios ends, because I'm usually too busy in August and September to do anything like that. Once Open Studios is going, then I'm in the sewing room. And I'm
awesome.
And then whatever. And then I have a bunch of stuff left over for May. Yay. So January, I kind of take off from sewing. And then starting in February, I'll start going, okay, what do I want to do this year? And I just have a little Facebook business page. I don't have a website or anything. I think once I retire, which by the way, I've given them a 2-year heads up.
Oh, wow.
That'll after my 20th Open Studios, 2024. Yeah. And I'll be 68. I'm like, it's time.
Time to relax.
It's time. I've worked it all out.
Yeah.
But I think once I retire, I may, you know, get an Etsy account or, you know, try to do a few more shows and just twice a year or something.
Yeah.
But what's fun is I'll have the option of doing whatever floats my boat. Yeah. So,
Has there been, by doing like the Open Studios and meeting all these artists, has that affected your kind of like what you're doing for your functional fabric work in any way?
Yeah. Yeah.
What were some of the things that you've seen?
I react to because a whole bunch of the artists that I'm friends with come and support me just like I come and support them. Yeah. And I get feedback from, you know, what they like and what they don't like. And it's built a really nice kind of community. I mean, I've got I think I have 500 plus people who follow me. Well, my business is called She's So Happy.
Okay.
SC. Yeah. She's So SEW. Yeah. My sister Mary loves puns.
It's good. Yeah.
It's fun. But yeah, it reminds me of how much work it is just to, you know, you have a deadline and you look and you're like, I'm tired, but I've got to get some stuff going here. And it's the work, I think that's probably one of the biggest surprises for artists when they do Open Studios for the first time is the amount of work.
Yeah, to prepare.
And I don't think the public understands how much work these guys got there. From the minute they get told they're in Open Studios, which is late May, it's like June, July, August, September, you're working. You're creating work. You're thinking about your marketing. You're thinking about your pricing. You're thinking about how am I going to display this? Am I going to use you know, nowadays it's like, am I going to invite people into the house or outside? If it's outside, how will I do it? And how will I direct people? And it's thinking of that's all going on while most of them are still working. Also carrying on a 40-hour a week job.
Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah. Not much downtime.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the one thing that we've learned with all sorts of different workshops is just reminding artists that if you really want to approach this professionally, it's a business.
Yeah.
And even at the very bare bones, have a business plan. What do I plan to do this year? How will I build on that? You know, take notes after your first year. How are you going to make next year better?
Yeah.
What can you do better? What are things that are challenging you that you don't feel comfortable doing? And can you bring it? I mean, a lot of my artists are 60 plus.
Yeah.
Even older, a lot of them are in their 70s. They really, a lot of them for years were not comfortable with social media, marketing myself. Yeah. And so I feeling awkward because they're not very tech savvy. And I'm like, you know, you find what you do best where you're having the challenges, bring in that granddaughter or that friend or bring in a fellow artist and like, hey, let's do a swap. If you could do this for me, I can do that for you.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because they always, you know, because I manage a ton of data. They're all like, how do you do it? And I'm like, it's in my DNA and I have no idea how you do that with oil paint because I cannot paint to save my life. I don't enjoy it. And I'm like, how do you make that look like that? How do you? So I always remind them that, you know, that's my skill set. It's okay.
Yeah.
And I'm at the computer every day, so I feel kind of comfortable learning and whatever.
Yeah,
and you're not. But a lot of the artists, especially when we first went digital in 2012, you would have thought the sky was falling.
Right.
Oh, my God, no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you guys, we'll get you through it.
So then before that, were they coming
paper.
By with submissions and stuff like that? Like the stack of submissions?
Paper and, submissions.
Oh,
and first,
those,
it, when I first started, it was all slides.
Oh,
I
yeah.
had to load slide carousels for the screening.
Right.
And, you know, inevitably you'd have to have them label it, what's the top. So you put the top down.
Yeah.
And we'd be in screening and all of a sudden everybody would go.
Right.
Like, yeah, they labeled that one wrong.
Yeah. So then you would do basically, so the people that were going to be the jurors for it would sit in a room and then you'd have like the,
yes.
which is kind of fun, just all sit together.
It was fun.
But yeah, yeah.
But so now, so then we went digital and we yeah. started using Zap, which I just love. They're great
nice
people.
Interface.
And and so what we did is we knew people would be having a hard time. So we said, hey, come in, and we helped people do the you know application. We helped them size their images. They had to learn how to size JPEGs in 1920. Oh my God!
Yeah.
But gosh, that's 10 years now, because it was people were really kind of shocked. But it's so that's been the other thing too is is, and it's not the same thing like you know 10 years ago, 20 years ago. You know, people would mail out you know 500 postcards.
Right.
A lot of people now just do a digital postcard.
Yeah.
And it's just savvy.
New landscape.
New landscape.
Well, and you guys, during COVID, you guys adjusted with doing like the artist
network. We did the Visual Arts Network because there was no in-person. Yeah, we just closed it in December.
Yeah, I saw that.
It was a wonderful space holder because the day we canceled Open Studios 2020, I just
sobbed. Yeah, it's so hard to do.
I got off my committee meeting and my executive director had been on it and he called me. He's like, Andy, okay? I'm like, I'm so sad. You know, what's the world without Open Studios?
Yeah.
And so I basically just didn't want a big black hole in Santa Cruz County in October.
Right.
We were a little bit later than we wanted, but November 1st, we launched the Visual Arts Network, and it's like, hey, if you're looking for artists, and the only problem was it wasn't a sales site. We couldn't tackle that in such a short time. So it was basically an online directory.
Yeah.
And I was really proud of the work we did having something there until the world opened up again.
Yeah.
But yeah, when we brought Open Studios back in 2021, oh my God.
People so
the
excited.
The energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
People were like, it was magical.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
people were so hungry for the eye to eye.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny how human beings, the appreciation level goes up when you lose something.
Totally.
And all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, I really missed that.
Yeah.
So I wish I wish it didn't take a loss to make people realize that something's valuable. Darn it.
Yeah. That's a good lesson to learn.
It is.
So you're the director of Open Studios and events, other events. What other events do you direct?
Well, nowadays it's lovely, small events. When I first started, we used to do a spring fundraiser every year. Big silent auction, live auction. It was a lot. And so I look back, I'm like, how did I do that? We don't do those. We stopped those big fundraisers when was it? I think the last one was either 2013 or 2014. But my executive director looked at, you know, we would net maybe $10,000, $12,000 after all of the
effort,
she's like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to get you $1,000. Than donors and the staff and whatever, because we're really not in the business of throwing a good party.
Yeah.
That's
the tough thing for nonprofits to realize that sometimes like you're going to make 10,000, but you're spending 15,000 in order to make.
And all the staff time. And then the artists, you know, the artist would donate a $800 painting to me and it would sell for $125 in the silent auction. And it got to the point where I just felt heartbroken. Like I just, and the artists don't have any write-off.
Yeah.
Only their materials. So
And
it was so funny because I think the next year somebody's like, oh, but you throw the best parties. And I'm like, they were fun. But I'm like, right there is we're not in the business of having a party. So it used to be a lot heavier. Now I just we do a annual party in June and a holiday gathering for peeps and then little things.
And then the meetups throughout the year.
Cool. Which is neat. And we did an opening, a grand opening for that Watsonville Center for the Arts in December. It was really fun and had all the groups perform. Oh my gosh, it was delightful. Everything from Indian White Hawk Council Esperanza del Valle and little kids and adults and everything. So, you know, something like that. And I've got a partner here that I work with, our development director, and we just bang it all out. Who's doing this? What's the food? What's the timing? Da, 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 da. And, yeah. and Crystal Burns, our communications director, and they work on this. She does the PR, and it's like, okay, everybody, we can do this. So yeah. they're far more simple than it used to be.
Yeah. You mean as far as
the events?
For you to do them just because of the experience you have and stuff like that.
And they're not live auctions at Chaminade with 150 people and tickets and the auctioneer and the dinner and the
so you're looking to retire in a couple of years. What would be the advice you would give to your replacement?
What advice will I give? Well, the advice would be to take a deep breath and be patient when people don't read what you said. And just to you know, look at yourself as a support, you know, and embrace the fact that you're presenting something to these guys that's really meaningful to them. And how can you continue to grow the program and adjust it as the community needs? Like, it might be easier for somebody when they come in new. Like for me, a few years ago, we had to make a pretty big shift because one of the guidelines for open studios is you have to hold your open studios in your studio. And it doesn't matter whether your studio is a kitchen table or a garage, or you don't have to have this anything fancy, but we want to keep the studio in open studios. And we really realized, especially down in Watsonville, there was and throughout the county, there were people like, I don't feel comfortable having somebody in my home. And actually the main thing was with the whole housing crisis, what if somebody is renting a room in a house? That landlord's like, nope, can't have the public in here. Yeah. What if somebody's renting and they think the lease might come up and they might not be able to renew? How in April did they say, I'll be here in October? So we actually opened up the guidelines and said, if you have an issue with housing or unable to welcome people, you can be hosted. So hosting is being hosted by an artist at their studio. And then we said, you had to be hosted by another artist. So starting with that whole thing of housing, we're like, you know what? We're going to start looking for alternatives. So in Watsonville, we started a conversation with Digital Nest saying, would you host artists on the weekend? And nobody took us up on it, but we started that conversation.
Yeah.
Kathleen Crocetti is doing this Watsonville Brillante project, and it's down at Museo Park in Watsonville. And she said, yes, we could have people come in there.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what happened this year is we were still putting that out there. Like if you have unstable housing, if you're not comfortable, artists could show in the courtyard at Pajaro Valley Arts. Okay. And we had two artists take up on that. And so things like that make me nervous because I'm like, oh my gosh, that's such a tenet of open studios. But we need to start meeting people where they are.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to continue. We're probably going to evolve on that. And when I looked at it, I'm like, what? You know, even if like 20 people are in a different space or whatever, you still got 280 that are in studios. So I think I need to let go of the fear of it and look at it and say, okay, we're going to need to start to evolve a little bit. Because I know other tours, people could, you know, you've got a building and it's got 10 artists.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think we're going to end up doing that a little bit more. And whenever somebody's hosted, we always tell them, bring a loop and slideshow, bring something on your computer or a little process board just to remind people of how you made your work.
Yeah.
So that it's different than just being a 10 by 10 pop-up somewhere. Yeah. So we do emphasize, because that's one of the cool things about open studios is people come away with an appreciation for how much it took to make that piece of art.
Yeah.
My best example of that was with my ex. We were at Capitol Art and Wine Festival once, and this artist, Christiana Honeycutt, makes these beautiful female figures in clay. And he said to her, and they're very similar in look and feel. And he said, do you have a mold for these? She goes, oh, no. Everyone is an individual coil. But I went through the whole process. Yeah. And he goes, that's why they cost $300.
People don't know the process.
It adds value to your work if you can explain the techniques, the time.
Yeah.
And ironically, for some people, it might now only take them half an hour to do something, but they've spent 30 years getting it.
Right.
So it's really not about time. It's about skill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's
why the process really helps.
Yeah. 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 So the advice is to be adaptable.
Yes.
And serve.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. For you then, so what is your kind of like, I always like to ask people what's their driving philosophy of life? Like, what is kind of like the thing that makes you tick? If you whittled everything down, it's like, this is what kind of like I run on.
Well, I think in a simple term, and it's pretty naive, but I always come back to the saying, life is good. That's how I do it. I do it on my Facebook and Instagram. It's like, life is good. I'm a very glass half full, going to give people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And it's your attitude. If you come at things like life is good, and it doesn't always turn out that way, but you come at it expectations of. So I think what drives me is just positivity.
Yeah. So yeah. Looking for the positive, the silver mm-hmm. lining, and all those mm-hmm. kind of things.
Yeah.
What is it then that kind of gets you down though? What would you say like?
Oh, well, especially these days, just injustice and ignoring facts. I'm absolutely gobsmacked that.
Interesting times.
Yeah. Interesting times. So what frustrates me is when people, in my job, the funny thing is people can tell when it's like mid to late September and I'm on the phone, da da da, I get off and I'm like, oh my goodness, what is it like in your head? Because I'll have somebody call me and they'll be like, hey, Ann, I can't find my artist number. And I'm like, wow, yeah. It's September 20th. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it is funny. I do get a little frustrated because I my job is to make everything as clear and present for everybody. And sometimes no matter how hard you try,
it
doesn't get through. And I feel badly because then I feel like I haven't done my job well, but you do have to read.
So that's what you say, that you get maybe more than getting down, you get kind of frustrated.
Kind of frustrated.
Yeah, sure. I could see that. Yeah. I'd say that. Yeah, that's good. Well, you seem to have like such a automatic smile and laugh and everything.
Yeah.
You
know, I am definitely a life is good positivity force.
Yeah, that's cool. Good.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, why don't you plug Open Studios, even though it's not coming up until October?
It doesn't. Well, the March 1st is when the application goes open for Open Studios 2023.
Okay.
So and it closes on April 30th. The only hitch for your listeners is you have to be a resident of Santa Cruz County.
Yeah.
But if they live in Santa Cruz County, March 1st, it goes online on April 30th. And it's a marvelous, it's a great family to be a part of.
Yeah.
Don't have to do it every year, but there's a sense of camaraderie and support and learning new things and meeting new people.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great thing to do. And it's so funny. I mean, you don't have to overthink it. In fact, one of the gals that was a first timer who was hosted at PVA, we did some outreach in Watsonville one-on-one. We had a contracted with this wonderful guy who's very connected in the community, and he contacted about 16 artists that he thought he would be ready for that plunge. And he contacted this wonderful gal, Josefina Roca, who's one of our Mariposa arts teachers, and she applied and was juried in. And what's interesting is when I talked to her, she literally didn't know about Open Studios until Jaime talked to her.
Yeah.
So that night she went home, she got on her computer. She's like,
been going home since.
Oh. And then she talked to her mom, and her mom's like, do it. And she's like, okay. And then she got in, she was like, ah. But she was telling, she's a teacher, so she had, But
she
was
ready to go, yeah.
You don't have to overthink it. And you know, it's not guaranteed that you're going to get juried in. But, you know, and the thing is, it's not, you don't have to overdo it either. Like, you literally are, each artist is supposed to have 15 works of original art. That's it. You don't have to have cards. You're not opening a store. You don't have to have G Clays and cards and this and that, whatever. You have to just have a body of work to show to the public. And so you also don't have to overthink, because you've been to these open studios where, oh my God, look at
people have been doing it.
But that's somebody
years.
Who's developed it.
Yeah.
And they've taken time and reinvested what they've earned to buy that nice display space and their display pieces and stuff. But
It's great. It's a great event for the artists and then also just for the community. I mean, it's so wonderful to see the process, meet the artists. And then that's what I love too, is when you meet the artists and you like their work, you become friends with them, and then you share it with other people.
And you know, the coolest thing about Open Studios is if you're lucky enough, even if it's just a card, you have met the person who made that.
Yeah.
And like my home is just, you know, there's Bob Barber's, you know, the surf photo, and I know the story of it. It's called Super Bowl, and he was in Hawaii, and he was in the bar at Super Bowl, and all the other photographers were in there, and he was like, huh, nobody else is out there. I'm going to go out and see it. It's just amazing piece. He was the only one out there. It's been his big seller. Yeah. But I have that story. I have a story with every piece I've bought because I've met the artist. Yeah. And
that's cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, thank you, Ann. And thank
you for
20 years. And then 22 will be the reign of Queen Anne.
Queen Anne. Queen Anne.
At the Arts Council.
Now, that'll be a big party. Jim asked, do you want to do a party? I'm like, oh, yes. Yeah. I want a party and music and
Are you
going
to have to put together your own party?
Oh, I'll help with it.
Because you're the director of events.
Yeah. I can help with that.
Cool. Well, thank you. And then March 1st is opening.
March 1st is opening.
April
30th.
April 30th. So artists, get your if you're in Santa Cruz County, get your work in.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you, Anne.
Oh, thank you, Daniel, what fun. What a nice thing to do on a Friday. Yay.
Talk to you later.
Have fun tonight.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Content Magazine podcast. Follow us on social media at Content Mag. Become a member and help us to continue to tell the stories of the South Bay creatives. This episode's music is 408 by Jack Pavlina. Follow him on Spotify and also on his Instagram at Jack Pavlina Music.